So it's 8 o'clock. Maybe we can take just a moment. We'll soon have a guided meditation with Jack. But after all we had, let's take just a moment together. So it's really gladdening to be here. I planned on speaking in Hebrew, but I see some names from abroad, so I'll try to respect that. And we are very happy if someone can help with muting, because I think. Okay. Ah, great. So it's really gladdening to be here tonight and to see so many people, a really huge gathering of all of us today. And thank you so much, Jack, for visiting us and supporting us in these times. And thank you, Stephen, for your consistent support of the Israeli Sangha. And also, I want to thank all the friends, the Dharma friends that take part in organizing this evening and so many other activities. We are in a very, very special situation for 3 months now, even more. It's not just a protest, it becomes a struggle that will probably take a lot of time, and we're in it together. In case any of you don't know about all the activities, Tovana, except our normal activities, is organizing special activities to support our hearts, to support our action. There is a special WhatsApp group, and actually some groups in which you can find the support. It's really nice. It's a community. It's a place to gather together, to share knowledge, to search, to share questions, to share our dukkha and our pains. And please find your ways to use. We already had a series of lectures about Dharma in action, and there will be more courses and more activities and evenings like that. And we're trying to let people know about all of them. There are some special groups that are thinking about the future after this struggle. What would we do? Asaf Katz here is the organizer of some special groups. There is a group that comes every Saturday night to Kaplan and to more places like Haifa for a silent protest together. Asaf, would you like to add something?
No, not much. Just that there are 500 people in our WhatsApp groups, and really good discussions happening. So it's really good to see the Sangha coming together and thinking about the situation and considering what is happening and talking about like evaluating and also acting. And I think that's very inspiring and very supporting to many of the people in the Sangha. So you're very welcome to join, and we will send the information at the end of the meeting as well.
Also, there is a quiet group. We'll post all the links very soon. Hopefully, you can receive them through the Zoom. Also, there is a silent group. If you're fed up with WhatsApp group that are too noisy, it's really silent, almost too silent, Vipassana group. So please join. And thank you again for all the organizers, Aner is here, and Tamar and Reut and all the folks in Endor. Thank you for all your activities. And I think it's enough for the beginning, and it's time to go to Jack. So thank you, Jack, again for coming.
Well, first, just thank you for inviting me. and allowing me to connect with you in these times, especially that have been so difficult. And it's a little strange to parachute in, not knowing what it's like for your lives on the ground. So I'm not sitting here saying, oh, now I'm going to come in with great answers. But there are some timeless truths and practices that you already know. And maybe I'm part of the cheering section for you to support your strong hearts and your best intentions. I'd like to start with a short meditation, maybe 5 minutes or something like that. But before it, just an image or two. When I practiced in the forest monasteries in Thailand and Burma and such places, Ajahn Chah's monasteries were not far from the borders of Laos and Cambodia during the American Vietnam War. And there was a big military base not far from there, and lots of flights of warplanes over the monastery. And from some of the branches, you could even see the flashes of bombs in Cambodia, things like that. And what the monastery was, it was an island of peace. It was a place where you could enter, and people treated the land and forest and everyone there with respect. You could lose your wallet or your watch and it would be returned. It would be put on the, altar, who's lost this. And even friends of mine who are anti-war activists working at the time in Laos and Vietnam who came, who were kind of burned out, would come and say, it's different here. And Ajahn Chah said, yes, wars, they come and they're terrible, based greed, hatred, and ignorance. We need to remember that there's something more longer lasting. We need to show the world in some way that there is a peace that's here and that's possible. So let's sit together in that spirit. If you can find a way to sit stably and quietly, and let your eyes close gently or lower your gaze. You take your seat in this human form halfway between heaven and earth as the Buddha that you are, as the awakening being, as the Bodhisattva. Take a few long breaths. And invite the mind to quiet and relax, and the heart to be at peace. You are the Buddha taking your seat. And with all the comings and goings, the 10,000 joys and sorrows, you take your seat of peacefulness and compassion in the midst of it all. Feel your groundedness on the earth, the stability of the earth. Like the Buddha, you can even reach your hand down and touch the earth. And notice how your body is breathing. It's interbreathing with all of life. The ocean of air with all the living beings exchanging. And And with each breath, invite a sense of quieting and centering. Steady. And peaceful. Yes, there will be this stream of background thoughts and emotions and sounds. Let them come and go like waves of the ocean. And you are still in the midst of them all. Stable and gracious, easy. And now, as the Buddha Bodhisattva that you are, with the heart more at peace in the midst of all things, let your eyes and heart open, inner eyes or outer, and gaze across the world around you with the eyes of compassion. So much suffering. And its causes, hatred and greed and fear. The heart becomes really tender for all who suffer. And all who cause suffering, caught in greed and hatred, and sense yourself as an antidote, as a deeper truth. Peace is possible. Freedom from fear is possible. And feel the hundreds of members of the community practicing with you. We become the peace and the steadiness and the unshakable compassion. And when you're ready, keeping this spirit, let your eyes open gently and thank you. Steven.
Thank you, Jack. and welcome everybody. And it's beautiful. We have 300 people with us right now. And I think that the space that you've opened up, Jack, and the environment around us, which is in existential crisis, is actually the subject of this evening. How we deal with this space that we are kind of potential bodhisattvas, and then there is an existential crisis around us, and in the gap between the two is the issues that we have to face and maybe to discuss this evening. The existential crisis in Israel is phenomenal. It's never been like this before. It's an utter collapse in a way of the values, not only the values expressed in the creation of this community, but also the values that make a society work. And we can see them collapsing like a house of cards around us. It wasn't that there was absolute peace and no discrimination before. The occupation was there before, and things were difficult. And Jack, you were saying you came 15 years ago and led peace walk through Jerusalem because they were absolutely needed then, and they're even more needed now. And today we're in, 15 years on, we're in a place of much insecurity and anger and fear and trauma and unsolved trauma. So Tovana as an organization and the Dharma community here have been responding in a way, in a beautiful way. And just a sense that I cannot stand aside. And there has been that sense in the community that we can't stand back. Something is really compelling all of us to go out and act in this situation. At the same time, what is affecting us as a Dharma community in this situation, in this existential situation, existential crisis here in Israel and in a sense globally as well. Israel is just kind of a model, maybe in its own character, but it's a global phenomena. The community, the Sangha, meet many challenges in manifesting their bodhisattva nature, their Buddha nature, out in the demonstrations in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. We meet problems of energy and sustainability. People get exhausted. They feel they can't. As Tati, you mentioned, this is a long term. It's a long term. How can we sustain the energy in the long term? Where do we keep finding our resources to continue day by day and giving up in a way a lot? There is the issue of anger. And I'm in my teaching, many people feel just a deep inner disturbance in their heart that doesn't let them rest. It kind of enters. We're sensitive beings. We don't really build a skin. We're open and sensitive. And then we feel the agitation and often the anger. And sometimes the compassion is contracted, reduced. Because we feel so disturbed. And then there's a lot of goodness and kindness and sense of giving in the Dharma community, in the Sangha, but that can often lead to frustration when things don't seem to be moving or there is a sense of it's all too much. So I think these are some of the questions or the struggle that maybe some of you would like to express with your stories this evening. And these are some of the questions that we need to face in this kind of space, transition space between the bodhisattva heart and the struggle outside. I would like to just give one or two pointers, maybe to help, and then we can go further in this discussion. And basically, the pointers are, what is it in our practice that can dissolve some of these difficulties and issues that we face? And what empowers us in our practice? Our practice is not, in that sense, something that we disconnect from all of this. The practice can really empower us. It's not two worlds, a world of practice and silence and stillness, and then a world of real engagement and involvement out on the streets. They're not two worlds. But how do we use the Dharma to create a sense of empowerment and stillness, where we bring our stillness out into the world, and it empowers us to be there and stand in our place and take our seat, just like we were hearing from Jack, take our seat in the demonstration, not just in a retreat or at home on our cushion. And so I'd like to address some of these issues in this discussion. For example, mindfulness, mindful caring awareness. How does it help us keep our attention on what's important and not get hijacked by the media, by the stress, by the, what is it that helps us in our mindful caring awareness to remember what's important? Where do we find a refuge that's continuous? Like the Buddha said, be an island to yourself. Where do we find the power to be an island in the stormy seas? And that's something really I'd like to address, and maybe Jack can really address it this evening too, and we can all discuss this. How do we find our connection that grounds us into our body, into the earth, into the community, and the steadiness, being an island in the stormy seas? How do we actually do that? And how do we really work with mind states that come up, such as the sense of anger and fear? How is it workable? Where do we find the place of that it's workable? No blame. Anger happens. Anger can be useful. Anger can sometimes work, you know, righteous anger. But how do we hold it and know it and be a partner of our anger and less of the controlled by it? And a final point that I want to raise here, just as in kind of first throwing out some of the issues, the big picture, it's so important. We can still keep the beauty of the big picture, in which, in a sense, we have to let go of designing or controlling circumstances, but we're offering ourselves to the world a sense of skill in living right and trusting our kind heart and offering ourselves to the world and letting the world tell us where we need to go, what we need to do. Let our hearts tell us, but it, keeping the big picture and then going out and making our statement and letting the world hear our voice. And this, I think these are some of the issues that perhaps we can discuss this evening. Do think of your questions and your issues that have come up when you go out on the street and demonstrate. Where do you need the help? Just think of the questions and we'll discuss them after listening to Jack for a bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I'm taking a breath because you've named a whole web of difficulties for people. And I will say a few things, but underlying them are questions for those of you who are listening, because in a way you've already started what is needed, which is the mutual acknowledgement of the suffering and the pain that we're called upon to bear and to bear witness to. Because we're not going to fix it. Suffering is the first noble truth. and its causes are very apparent: greed, hatred, and ignorance in all its forms. And as we know, politics increases it. A political commentator in the US 100 years ago wrote, the whole aim of politics is to keep the populace alarmed by an endless series of fearful things, most of them imaginary. And that's part of how that dynamic of politics works. But we also know that it's not underlying truth. So here is this huge, immense amount of suffering. Questions for you to reflect on: who inspires you? Because it's also not a new story. There have been wars and conflicts before. Where do you draw strength? And when I speak with you, if I have anything to say that's important, I have to draw on the moral authority of my own teachers more than my own experience. I lived with and practiced closely with the Cambodian elder Mahagosananda, that most of you have heard of, nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize many, many times. And we lived together in a forest monastery where loving kindness was his main practice, loving kindness and compassion. And he would take time every day, no matter what was happening, to do slow walking, to sit quietly. And after the Cambodian genocide, we went together to the refugee camps that had been set up by the UN, hundreds of thousands of people, and got permission to open a little Buddhist temple in the middle of several of the camps that had 50 or 100,000 people. Just a platform and an altar with a Buddha image and a tin roof, and went through the camps and asked, after getting permission to do it, invited people who wanted to come and sit together. And the Khmer Rouge underground in the camp said, if anyone went to this opening, when they got back to Cambodia, they would be shot or killed. Went through the camps and rang the temple bell. And to our surprise, 25,000 people poured into the square. And I watched Gosananda and I thought, what could he say? All 19 members of his family had been killed, his temple burned, his community destroyed. And you looked out across the face of all these people who had suffered immense trauma, and there was a grandmother and just one surviving grandchild and so forth. He put his hands together and he began to chant in Cambodian, in Pali or Sanskrit, one of the first verses of the Buddhist teachings: hatred never ends by hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is the ancient and eternal law. And as he began to recite it over and over again, chants that they hadn't heard in some years because they were forbidden, people began to chant with him and weep as they did. And I realized that he was speaking a truth that was even bigger than their suffering. That hatred never ends by hatred, but by love alone is healed. This is the ancient eternal law. And for 15 years, then he led peace walks through the killing fields and mine field areas, saying people needed to go back to their village, practicing loving kindness one step at a time, ringing his bell and chanting to reclaim their land and reclaim their heart. You've all probably heard this story, but I tell it as a reminder to us, not only because of what he was able to do, but because of his practice. that I traveled with him in various parts of the globe, and he always took time to be silent. There was not the sense of an emergency. Instead, there was a sense of, may I become that which inhabit that which I wish for the world. He did his loving kindness and compassion practice. He walked in meditation. He sat quietly. He wasn't big on getting more news. I think you could probably turn the news off and, you know, 5 or 10 minutes a week would probably be all that you needed. The plot is not actually that different than it's been. But instead, he centered himself in a peaceful heart. As Thich Nhat Hanh explained in that famous passage, when the crowded Vietnamese refugee boats met with storms of pirates, if everyone panicked, all would be lost. But if even one person remained steady on that boat, it was enough. It showed the way for everyone to survive. And Gandhi, in his words, when I despair, so this is really important. Here's Gandhi despairing, like many of you and us. We have despair and anger and fear and all these things. When I despair, I remember that all through history, the way of truth and love has always won. Yes, there have been murderers and tyrants, and for a time they can seem invincible, but in the end, they always fall. Think of it, always. So this is also the long game in some way. And of course, it's our work. If someone is hungry, to feed them. In Zen, they say there are only two things. You sit and you sweep the garden. And it doesn't matter how big the garden is. You quiet the mind and open the heart. You sit and become that Buddha that you are. And then you get up with the eyes of compassion and you tend to what needs to be done, standing up for justice, caring for those who are suffering, knowing that suffering is not the end of the story. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm just reminding you that we're in a very long process as humanity of learning how to be together. And the Holy Land is both an important place and maybe the place eventually to demonstrate that this is possible. And you, like Gandhi, no matter how long it takes as long as it takes, have the intention in the heart. You don't get to control what happens around you, but you do get to set the compass of your heart. And you set the moral compass and the conscious compass of what you do. Tell you one more story and a tiny little reflection, and then we'll just talk with one another. A woman came to work with me who was a psychologist, and her psychological work was for the United Nations. She was working with torture survivors. And sad to say, they came from all over the world. There are 196 countries, the majority of them, torture takes place. Certainly in the US, I mean, there were folks from Haiti and Afghanistan and Pakistan and places in Africa and so forth, but all over Latin America. I could weep just naming the countries. Do I start with Argentina? Do I start with Chile? Where do we go? And when she would sit and meditate, all the stories would come back. She said, what can I do? So I taught her a few things, which you all know. First, to ground herself on the earth, to touch the earth as she sat, to feel that presence, the steadiness of the earth, abiding with all of this. And then to sweep through her body with loving kindness and loving awareness and find all the places that were holding those stories and drain them down into the earth several times, to do some cleansing rituals. And then I asked her, I said, tell me about how you sit with people physically. And she said, well, they come in and I give them a place to sit. I have a chair. And she described it. And I said, I'd like to suggest that you put a shelf behind you. And on that shelf, you put an image of the Buddha and of Kuan Yin, the goddess of infinite compassion. And while you're at it, maybe you put Mother Mary, you know, in Jesus, and you put in, you know, in Hebrew or whatever, some of the teachings of Solomon. You put some of the Haitian gods, because you see all these folks from Haiti. You definitely want to put Kali on there and Durga. You need them, you know, basically fill it up, you know, and then put some images. Put Gandhi and, you know, Martin Luther King, and put Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman, all those people who've lived through what you're living, what you're hearing, because you need backup. And I want it so that when you go in the morning, you bow to the images of Sojourner Truth and Harriet Tubman and Ellen Sirleaf, who said, Liberia used to be known for its child soldiers, and now it's known for its women leaders. And you make a bow and you say, will you hold this? Because it's not right for you to carry it in your own body. And more importantly, when people come in, they'll see who's behind you. They'll see that it's not just you, but that there's something great in the universe manifest through all these sages and beings that carries the sorrows of the world in a different way, with both compassion and a steadiness and an alternate to the violence and hatred. And at the end of every day, you know, between people, wash your hands that you see and cleanse yourself. And, you know, at the end of the day, turn there and say, you carry this, please, not me. I'll be back tomorrow to do my work, but it's not mine. And I tell this story because of that deep question for all of you, of how do we sustain ourselves? Whether it's speaking of Mahagosananda or of this wonderful woman, you can't do it yourself. We need community and friends. You probably should have a partner. Everybody should have a practice partner that you speak to. Maybe you text once a day. What have you done that helped sustain you? Just a few sentences every day. Make your own altar and put on it the images of whoever you get inspired by, you know, and realize that it's not you, it's us. It's humans learning to do this, and that there have been moral authorities and beings that understand how to hold the suffering of the world in compassion and freedom, because suffering's only the first noble truth and its cause is the second, but there's also a path to the end of suffering. I'm going to stop here. I want to stop here because I don't want to sit here and lecture at you. I just wanted to tell the stories because they've helped me. They've touched me over the years. And maybe they'll remind you of something. Close your eyes for a moment.
Mama me?
Crying child, breathe with a child. Aw. So let your eyes close for a moment and reflect. Who is it that inspires you to keep going? To quiet your mind and enter the great strength of compassion. Who inspires you? You can know. And where do you draw your strength and steadiness? What's worked for you so far? You can remember and know what's inspired or touched you. How do you keep your own heart soft and peaceful and strong? You know. And how can you do it together with others? And finally, let yourself sense or see or imagine any way you can, if this works for you, it does for some, that the bodhisattvas, the awakened beings, or the ones who inspire you, have left a gift at your feet, a package that's there, wrapped up. And it's a gift from the wisest of these beings. And when you open it, you will find a clear symbol of what will most help you stay steady and inwardly well, strong and compassionate, just the medicine that you need. This clear symbol of what you most need. Let yourself unwrap it and open it. And if it's hard to see, hold it up to the sunlight. You can know. The clear symbol from these, from the wisest beings, just what you need. Because the answer is really, they come from within us. The conflicts arise from fear and confusion and greed and hatred. In the end, the understanding also is found within the heart. So thank you. Let your eyes open, and I'd love to hear from people. Your experiences, what's worked, who inspires you, what you've learned. Raise your little hand, or however we're going to do it. Maybe Stephen or someone can call on folks.
Maybe David can start.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity to be the first one. I want to say something complimentary to what was said till now. I participate in the demonstrations at least weekly, and I write a lot in different protest groups. And as time goes by, I feel more and more that we are making it. And I find this country-wide civil fight in Israel to be so compatible with the Dharma practice, since it is non-violent. It is non-violent. I've been in demonstrations ever since it started, and I personally didn't see any violent act. I mean, there were some, but not that common. Mostly a non-violent civil action, and it targets directly at a high ideal, and the ideal is full liberal democracy. So I hope and expect even that this striving to end at even a better democracy than we had in our 75 years. And for me, this corrupt government, which will hopefully be gone soon, is here to test us, to wake us up to do changes in our way of government that had to be done long ago, like writing a constitution and strengthening the Supreme Court, and I don't want to go to details. So I hope and expect that this will all be eventually for the better. And my practice is supporting this faith. It is, my practice is the basis on which I can stand and act for this cause. Among people who are mostly in confusion and turmoil, so I cannot find the strength outside. I find it only in my practice. I mostly practice by myself alone. And after I feel I have this strength, I go every day, which there is a demonstration in the evening, I make it a whole practice day. So from the morning, I have all my rituals and meditation and for I learn in the monastery. So I keep it all. And then when I go to the demonstration at the evening, I'm so connected and relaxed that there's no way anything can move me. So, and at
so least- David, thank I you. Want to thank you. I want to make sure time for others, but before we stop, I want to pause and feel with you the trust that you have. Not only do you have the values, but you actually trust and believe that when you plant good seeds, which is what you are doing, that in the long run, they will bear fruit. You have this vision and this possibility. You know, you speak like Martin Luther King saying, I have a dream, that it's possible, and that your practice and your faith, we can feel it, is something that carries you in this beautiful way. So this is an offering from you to all of us. Thank you.
So if someone wants to ask a question, please either raise your hands. We can't see you all, so it's best to, there is this raised hand sign. Or if you are shy and don't want to practice with it, you can write it and we'll try and read it. So if anyone wants to ask something, please.
I am shy, but I would like to get over it for this opportunity. I would just like to express my gratitude to, well, basically all of you. But it was very empowering to hear your words, Jack, regarding the ability to approach somebody who I, well, adore, but who I trust with very heavy loads. That's a very strong possibility. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Another, raise your hand or
thank you very much for the talk. I'm also going to the demonstrations every week. And, you know, I practice my meditation and I want to, you know, it's non-violent outside. I'm very proud of the way it's done. and I feel like we're doing something good. But inside of me, I'm getting very violent. I'm getting hateful and righteous. And I can kill someone with my words, you know, because I'm not a violent person. But, you know, I feel like there is a very difficult just planting the seeds without being attached to the results is just something I find very difficult. And I get into a spiral where I just tell myself, you have to stop. Don't listen to news. Just have diet of politics because it's doing you bad things. And obviously, you can't help anyone if you're not in a good space. So I would like to hear your advice about how to do it in a more elegant, tough way.
What is your name? I'm sorry.
Limo.
All right. The sound isn't all that great. I'd like to ask you if you're willing to close your eyes for a moment, because the question that you raise is really one for many, many people. And anger exists in our hearts. It's the reality that it will rise and fear, all these things. So first close your eyes and take a few deep breaths. And then when you speak of having the states of anger and, you know, violence images and so forth arise in you, where do you hold them in your body? You can know if you pay attention.
In my chest.
All right. What do they feel like?
Hot and sort of restless.
All right, so feel the heat or the fire of them. And you said sort of...
like restlessness, something moving, unsettled.
All right, so first let yourself feel them with your own mindful, kind attention, caring attention. This is part of your humanity. And next, let yourself sense your relationship to them. How are you relating to this place of heat and anger and violence in yourself?
I think there is a part of me that doesn't like it because I want to be someone who doesn't feel these feelings intensely. But I have to admit that there is a part of me that really enjoys the sort of high energy and
the power of it.
And yes.
All right. So these are a part of you. Part of you wants to get rid of them. That's aversion. And another part likes the power.
Yes.
Now, as you feel this, surround it with compassion, because in it is also a certain measure of pain. And instead of aversion, there's this part, this almost like this being that's hot and, you know, angry and so forth. And what happens if you bring in a field of compassion, not trying to get rid of it, noticing sometimes you can even enjoy its power, and say, oh, you're trying to protect me. You're trying to protect the world. Thank you. Because that's what it's trying to do. Say thank you, and you hold it with kindness. See what happens as you do this inwardly.
I think something softens and the fire is lowering.
So it softens in some way, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, because now you're not at war with it. You're not fighting it. You're recognizing, like the Buddha, you know, recognizing when Mara comes, greed, fear, anger, and so forth, all the temptations. Now you're saying, I see you, almost like you can bow to it. I feel all this, and you hold it with compassion and understanding because it's part of your humanity. And you don't have to get rid of it. But you also don't have to believe it. You can simply respect it. And when you say, thank you for helping protect me, you can say, you know, I'm actually okay now. You can relax to this angry part. Thank you for trying to keep me safe. You can relax, I'm okay. And notice what happens.
Yes, there is a sense of lightness, I think.
Yes. And let yourself feel that, and the strength that you have to be a loving witness of it, and that you're actually much bigger than this. You have this as part of your humanity, but there's so much more. And then lastly, remember when you have felt both wise and loving and strong, when you felt that the most in your life, how you felt wise and loving and strong. And realize that you can feel this now, even as you honor this part, who you are is much bigger. And what does this feel like?
It's a bit of a struggle because I need to become to accept. And I feel like I'm separated from my opponents. So it's difficult to get into this wide openness. I need to do some more work on something before I can really transfer myself to that.
And so, okay, one more thing. This is important and good what you say. You don't have to struggle to do this. The struggle that arises, hold it with the same compassion and say, all right, this struggle has fear in it and how do I become different? You don't have to be different. You can be just where you are with kindness and awareness. And you feel the struggle just as you feel the, you know, the heat and fire and anger, almost as if you can bow to them and say, yes, I see you. I acknowledge you. And in that moment, in this moment, you become the awareness itself, the kind or loving awareness that says, yes, this is part of humanity, including the struggle and the doubts. And you take a breath and realize that you're much bigger than all of this. Put your hand on your heart if you're willing to, with great self-compassion. Because you're carrying Israel, you know, in your body. And with a kind of tenderness and spacious awareness, yes, I can carry all these things, but not be taken over by them. And feel the awareness that acknowledges with kindness. Thank you for keeping me safe to all these. I'm okay just now. And let your eyes open again when you're ready. So thank you for that, because that was quite vulnerable and at the same time, I think important for all of us, that the idea isn't to try to get rid of what's there, but you become the space of loving awareness that can acknowledge these are the forces in the society around and within us and hold them with some compassion and some thanks for their trying to protect you and realize that who you are is the awareness itself, is the loving awareness, the loving witness of them. So that was really beautiful.
Thank you.
And it's, you know, it's, we practice together and you may do it again, you know, a number of times. But what you did was really a gift to the rest of us who got to be with you as well. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Stephen, how long do we have for this dance?
We have another half an hour.
Oh, good. All right.
And I'd like to add a couple of words, responding to both David and Limor. It may not be so difficult and such a big issue to shift the view and feel that when we go out and demonstrate, when we go out and take action, even though there's a lot of potential for pressure there, there's something in us very, very basic that we are, in a way, mothering with something very, very deep and fundamental. And it seems like, okay, demonstration, and we stand and we walk and we're the many people, but there's something very fundamental. It's as if the world is working through us to heal itself. And I think we can shift that view from pressure to saying, I'm healing, and Limor, you too. I'm healing the world in this. I don't know what will result from it. The world will receive my action and my help and do what it wants. I'm not in charge. But this act of together in a political, so-called political action, and David was saying it too, is something very positive and potentially very beautiful. All of us are gathering together to manifest something in our heart, which is basic kindness. And if we take that bigger view, I think it can make a lot of ease and naturalness. It's like the butterfly effect. You know, we're just going out there to make waves. The world after that will do what it wants with it. We can't be in charge. But to make waves, this is what we can do. And in a way, to do that is beautiful for all of us. So there's a couple of thoughts. Yeah, Dalia, I think it was...
We'll have Dalia, and then the Shavit wanted to ask, and he disappeared. So if you still want, he came back. So maybe we'll do it by the order, Dalia, and then David, and then Shavit. And then there are some written questions that we can address.
Thank you. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I find myself, I wrote to you privately and I am talking now, I find myself in a different position. I understand the struggle and I also like the way that we protest, that protest and want democracy and gather together to demonstrate it. But to my person, I need also quiet times in order to stay calm, in order to stay soft. And I don't find any sangha with me, except for myself, which I know how to support myself. I know it all my life, but I don't find any sangha that has quiet times all the time in all the conversation with everybody. Always the struggles comes up. There is no rest, there is no gap. And I find myself very lonely in it and really don't know what to do with it.
Dalia, thank you for what you're lifting up for everyone, because it's absolutely critical. And I can feel you're longer both for the silence, but also for the support. Before we go any further, all of those of you who are on the screen, if any of you would like to have a more partnership in silence or even in conversation where we talk a bit and then we get quiet, raise your hand so Dalia can see if anyone else wants what she wants. I see some hands raised. Can you see, Dahlia, on the screen? Half of them raised their hands. So just so you sense, first of all, look at that big smile on her face. You're not quite as alone in this as you thought. Now also, you can actually reach out and find a silence partner. And I think it's incredibly helpful to have practice partners. And you know these folks, and pick one or two and say, can we make times where we're just quiet together? You recall, I think, very well that Gandhi took a day of a whole day each week to be in silence. So you're speaking something that's very deep, that's part of this long human stream, and you're articulating, you're carrying it in a beautiful way. And, you know, in the middle of trying to dismantle the British Empire, and there were riots in the streets and people being killed, they say, Gandhi, you must come out. Gandhiji, come. And you say, no, I'm sorry. It's, you know, it's Thursday. It's my day of silence. I won't do it. But because he understood what you just said, he was able from that quiet place to go out in the world and be something different than all the noise. So now I ask you a simple question. What would support you most? Would it be partnering with others you can know, or what might help you?
I think that other people that feel like me and can have the gaps of silence, which make me more power to help others in my profession and in my involvement. But I need people around me that also can have these silence and gaps.
So all those hands went up. You probably so not know some of these people.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I can keep it. I don't know those people. Some of them, I had a sangha, but they are very stormy. So I can't. Every group that I try to join had the same phenomena.
All right, so let me ask Stephen, I don't know how Tovana works and so forth. Can you have a silent sitting or silent group a few times a week where people can just come in and be together? Is that possible?
There is actually many groups in through Tovana and different all over the country. Even now on the chat, Dahlia, people are offering their I assume the chat will be saved, and there are people already on this chat that are offering their connection for communities that actually you're not alone in a way. Yeah. Nobody can do this without the sense of coming back home. It's so basic and so right that you're feeling that. But there's plenty of opportunity in Thai Tovana. So I suggest look at the chat after this session is finished, and also keep an eye on the Tovana website, where there are all the lists of communities and sitting groups all over the country, and you find the one that fits you. There will be.
There were wonderful groups, really, in Tovana and in other places, but they're all in a mess. In my
I think it's time to let go and let other people ask, please, yeah. Dahlia. Okay.
Yeah. Just but I want to say thank you for lifting this up, and also. What was important is that you gave voice to it and that there was a big response. Lots of people said, yes, this is important. And as Stephen pointed out, there is in the chat, folks. So it's a great, you know, gift to just raise this up and give voice to it. Thank you, yeah. Dahlia. Next person, please.
I think it's David.
Hi. Thank you so much to the both of you. Thank you, Jack, for your inspiring work over the years. I have a question that is more regarding the aspect of the view in the practice. I hope I'll be able to articulate it in English. And especially nowadays, with all those turbulent times that we experience in Israel and all the talks that are going around, both in social media and also in the nearer practicing, Buddhist practicing communities and circles, it kind of very present, like the way that people solidify things and kind of have a righteous, moralistic view about things and kind of narrow things down to right and wrong and take stands that sometimes it feels too narrow and in a way kind of opposite of everything that I learned in my Buddhist teaching so far. And on one end, there's a part of me that realizes that there is nothing that I can do or say to change people's mind because they're like so definite about their stance. And on the other hand, I feel kind of passive. It leaves me kind of passive because I say, okay, so just let go, let people think whatever they think. But I don't know, there is a kind of a call inside to somehow find a skillful way to broaden the view and to take it a bit, not like, to not let just moral ideals lead people, because the Buddhist view is first of all, or at the end of the line, is about wisdom, which is not separated from compassion. So I was wondering if you could offer a direction that in which I can do something actively to help broaden the view of people who are really coming with good intentions, but it kind of feels that it's getting lost in the energies of being right and righteous and, you know.
So this is also a really important question. Thank you for this, David. And of course, you started, if I understand, really talking about people even within the Buddhist community who become fixated and so forth. Yeah, I've thought at times about writing a book entitled Buddhists Behaving Badly. But it would have a lot of chapters in it, you know, because we're human beings. So we know how to use things, but we also know how to misuse them in some way. And that's also part of our nature. And so you're lifting this up for us to recognize that people may ostensibly be practicing Buddhist teachings, but in some way it also gets caught in their own ignorance and their own polarization. So first, just to, and that it's not new. I promise you, you could go to all those Buddhist countries and you'd find plenty of Buddhists behaving badly, you know, with unhealthy views or even worse, you know, racist views and things like that. They're there. And because we're human, why should that not be here as well? Then you ask the question, how do I help change this? And I think that's a question in almost everybody's heart on the screen here, because, you know, people are behaving badly all around. And how do I do this? I really have to pause with it. And there's a kind of a sadness that comes over me, even a little bit of grief. I don't know if you feel that. You're nodding. The way that the universe and the human universe is constructed, I don't think that it's our place to be able to change the minds of others in that way. One of the titles for the Buddha. There are like 35 different titles, but one of them that I really loved, he was the teacher of those who can be taught, which is a kind of amazing phrase. You know, even here's the Buddha, but yeah, then there's some of these people you're talking about who would say, no, don't listen. And I remember going into some temples in Burma, I was going around talking about peace and saying, you've forgotten what the Buddha taught, because those were places where people anti-Muslim or anti-this, you know, but they didn't want to hear it. So part of it is that grief or sadness that this is also the way the world is constructed. And then I build on what Stephen said so beautifully in, you know, you are planting seeds. You become the carrier of not only inner peace, but the ability to hold the opposites, that it's not all black and white and not blame and not evil people, but these are the forces of fear that are stirred up. And then, you know, the fear turns into anger and self-righteousness and so forth. You can be a counterweight. There's a term from the old days called make weight. Remember, you go in the market and there would be those two scales and they'd put some mangoes or whatever on one side and some weights. The make weight are the tiny little ones. Sometimes they're like little, you know, roosters or whatever, little fish or something. But it turns out that that little make weight can tip the direction of the scale. And you are that. It's not given to you to decide when or how that will happen, but you get to plan, you get to stay true to what has integrity in you. You can look with great compassion, just pause for a moment, at people who are lost in blame, rather than even try to change them. Feel how stuck they are. You know, James Baldwin wrote, I imagine one of the reasons people cling to their hate and ignorance so stubbornly is because they sense that once hate is gone, they will be forced to deal with their own pain. And so if you look through those eyes, people are dealing with their fear and pain. And then you can see them with some compassion. Yes, there's ignorance and all of that. They're Buddhists behaving badly. They're humans behaving badly. And you get to see with some compassion. All you have to do is be a parent. Do you have any kids? All you have to do is be a parent, and you know very, very quickly how you can't really change the mind of somebody else. You might wish to. My own children. Oh, I love the good intention behind what you're saying, and you're illuminating something that asked a big heart of compassion for us, and to be true to yourself and to plant the seeds that you want the world to be and let other people feel it. Thank you
so much. Your advice on being a parent resembles very much the advice that my mom would give me and have been giving me for a very long time, so I'll try my best. Thank you so much.
So if Shavit is still here, or Anat Meir asked to ask, and if not, then it seems like it's Ran Kuttner's turn.
Jack, first of all, thank you very much for being with us today, for taking the time. Throughout your writings, you talk about, you know, the first noble truth, the second noble truth being noble, i.e., you know, maybe it is time for us to be aware of the suffering and the attachment and the clinging that we're grabbing to so wholeheartedly in these times of despair. In that respect, we behave badly, which is okay in the sense that, you know, we have all this hatred, as Animal was saying, all this anger, all this kind of a view of the other in the other side. Someone was writing here about the other, you know, the those in the other side. and we hold firmly to a sense of or an image that we have of who they are. And I, you know, my reflection here, and I hope it will turn into a question, is how to kind of be aware of that rising within me in the interpersonal space, you know, opening the news or, you know, hearing about things that happen. And I invite myself to do that, not necessarily for the sake of immediately transform it. Well, I will do loving kindness meditation. I do it with my students, but it's not that. Before that, it's about just, you know, pausing there and allowing ourselves bear witness to the fact that those others are probably suffering in the very same way, doing the very same thing. So my question would probably be, what would it be to help us engage those others that we are so angry and furious or and full of hatred and towards? How do we engage them with that kind of compassion of bearing witness to the same kind of suffering and attachment that we and they hold way before even moving towards transforming it? I think that at this stage, that's a lot to do.
So, Ron, first of all, you're a teacher, you said. Your students are lucky. What you said and what you articulated was beautiful Dharma from the beginning. And it had a lot of understanding in it. So first, I just want to honor that.
Thank you.
And then you raise up the question that so many, I think, are feeling, all right, to try to skip to transformation and kind of do a spiritual bypass, so to speak, doesn't work. You talked about it too, about the noble truth. We actually have to bear witness to the suffering and bear it in some way. If we can't bear it, then we actually can't do anything about it because we're either frightened or fighting or something like that. So you already gave a lot of the answer in what you said. So importantly, bearing witness and so forth. And then you say, and then I want to be able to reach out in some fashion. And sometimes people will be receptive and sometimes they won't. If you were to ask in your class, or if we could ask people here, what helps in trying to do this? What have you found that helps? There would be a number of different answers. Some would say, well, I was at the, you know, the dinner table and there were these people who had very different views. And I leaned in and I listened to them. I said, tell me more. What are you afraid of? Tell me. Just that leaning in and listening for some people is an amazing act. But I will ask you, what have you seen that helped?
Mm-hmm. Being able to pause, mm-hmm. being able to try and ease that agitation that rises, and try to open up without necessarily the attention of transforming anyone, but just you know, being present with others with that suffering. I take it from the inside dialogue framework, but that's another one.
Yeah. Beautiful teaching.
Jack?
Thank you. Yeah.
We have another 5 minutes. And if you or Steven would like to say anything about Dana, and if not, or anyway, Gadi and Bracha are still waiting, but please do say something about Dana.
Well, I'll just say one thing. Of course, I'm not doing this for donations or Donna. Apparently, there is, and you can put it in the chat, Stephen said there's a Palestinian man or group that are doing some very beautiful Dharma peace work. What was his name? Esau or something, Stephen?
Esau, yeah. Yeah.
And so if anyone feels moved to do any, you know, response of support, you can look for that in the chat. Because it's us, you know, we can support each other.
Mm.
And I just want to take a breath and a pause because we do only have a few more minutes. One of the things I want to remark on is the common humanity of the questions and concerns. In some way, I've heard a lot of wisdom from you and care from each one of you in different ways. It's kind of beautiful, you know, and it's shared. These are the questions and concerns. How do I keep myself that place of the zone of peace and not close my heart even to my own pain and fear and my own anger? How do I do that? You know, is that, how do I practice with that? And then how do I become that? How do I move out to connect with others in a nonviolent, supportive way? Yes, but also those who are the other. These are the questions the world needs to learn. And as people have lifted up, this may be the time and the place, one of them, where the world can see something new happen, something benevolent and better come out of it. And it comes from your heart and the questions and the wisdom that's behind them. So this kind of common, I just feel the common thread of you all holding something and holding it with your practices and your understanding. So maybe one last person, what do you think?
As perhaps Gadi, and just to say that please be supported by Tovana activities. If you haven't been in the beginning, there are WhatsApp groups. We will post again the links, and there are, in Tovana's side, there we try to do activities like this. I see the need in the chat and in the raised hand, so we'll try to organize more evening like this. And thank you. I hope Jackie will come again, because we enjoy your wisdom so much.
Oh, thank you. And you know, there is this passage from Molly Ivins, who was an American activist for many years. She wrote not long before she died. She said, "Keep fighting for freedom and justice, beloved. But don't forget to have some fun doing it," which is an amazing thing to say. We're in some huge human dance, and it's got tremendous suffering and calls on all our compassion, but it's also not just a grim duty. It's something bigger than that. It's like spring coming. It's like there's something that wants to evolve in humanity, and we get to play a part in that and play your part beautifully with your tears, but also somehow with a kind of joy that Mahagosananda had. If he went into the refugee camps and he was just depressed, everybody was already depressed. That wasn't actually helping. But he had such a loving countenance and such an innate joy. He said, "Yes, we've suffered, and there's something more." And in that regard, that's, I think, what Molly Ivins is pointing to, but also that I hear from the goodwill of folks. And I realize actually our time is up, so I just have to make a bow to Tovana, to Stephen, you know, to all of you who have helped. We're with you.
So as you can see in the chat, many of us want you to come again, and I really want to thank you and to thank Stephen for all his support for the Israeli Sangha throughout all these years. And please, friends, feel free to support, keep supporting Tovana. Tovana is doing so much for the Israeli Dharma and to support this struggle. So, and be playful, as Jack said, let's play together and go to the demonstration playfully and have a playful walks together and playful demonstration. And thank you again.
Actually,
thank all of you for coming.
I'm gonna tell one last story. So, when President Donald Trump tried to close the borders of the U.S. right away to these seven predominantly Muslim countries, and all these people were locked inside the airport, I went down with my daughter, who's an activist, human rights lawyer, She brought down a bunch of from Berkeley of her friends. And there were 500 people at each of the gates with signs, no blame, no fear, refugees are welcome here, and so forth. All the usual protests, you know, you've been out. And then we were at one gate, this big gate where the immigration was. People were chanting. And then in the middle of this came a group of about 8 or 9 people. They were a New Orleans jazz band, right? So they brought their saxophone and their trumpet and their drums in the middle of these 400 people. And people were chanting, no ban, no fear, refugees are welcome here. And the drummer picked it up and made a little drumming thing with it that changed it. And then the trumpet played a riff on top. And pretty soon people were singing it, no ban, no fear. And then they all started dancing, you know, with this incredibly great band behind them. They were at the gate. They weren't going away. They were making their voices heard. And they were having a good time while they did it. They said, we're here. We're standing up. And we bring you beauty of heart and joy, as well as, you know, all the struggle. We're humans. Let's do this dance together. Let's make it something that we remember, that turns the entire energy from just the fight and the struggle to something beautiful. And you all carry that beauty in your heart. So I thank you and letting me tell that last story. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack. I have a feeling many of us would stay all night with you.
Thank you.
But we have to finish.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody. Bye, everybody. Keep in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Thank you. Toda raba.
So, no idea.